All right, at this point, I would like to welcome up our guest speaker, Julie Randall. She's going to be talking to us about supporting every member of our community. Julie is a social worker, community organizer, and an advocate who has successfully founded and managed nonprofits in Hendricks County over the last 26 years. She is dedicated to empowering those struggling for stability through strengths-based practice, social justice, housing, and systemic reform. Julie, come on up.
Good morning. I think I met most everybody. I don't think we met. Hi. I'm Julie Randall. I'm the Executive Director of Family Promise of Hendricks County. And this church, I've actually been before you before. I don't know if this is probably my third time to be here in my lifetime, but you know, really early on, I sat in these front pews and I watched my mother learn to be taught the pipe organ. I lived just right down the street from here. Some of my earliest memories of actually being a person were in this church with my mom. And then as I grew older, I learned to play the piano. And this is where we would have our yearly recital, was in this church. And so I can remember sitting right there in those pews being nervous out of my mind because I was having to play the piano. I spent many, many hours sitting on those steps right outside, just hanging out because we lived just right down the street, and it always felt like a peaceful place to just hang out when I was a little girl. So this church has meant a lot to me through the years, and I've always appreciated what it was and what it's become. It was really wonderful when the Presbyterian Church left to see that this wonderful group took over and brought it life and continue this work in the community, I think is wonderful and it's appreciated. And I'm excited to be here today to talk to you a little bit more about Family Promise and some of the new work that we're doing in our community. And since it's such a small group, please feel free to interrupt me anytime to ask questions or to elaborate on anything. You know, I'm totally fine with that. I do a lot of public speaking, and I very rarely have a plan. So you won't be messing up my flow if you interrupt. I'm just fine with that, and I'm glad to talk about whatever you guys would like. I've been here my whole life, obviously, from my early stories, and I went to Valparaiso University and became a social worker, came back to this community, and was a probation officer for Mary Lee Comer for a couple of years after I graduated from college. And that lasted about 2 years, and Mary Lee sat me down in her office one day and just said, "Don't really think you're cut out to be a probation officer." It may have been because I would have probationers come in and I would say, "It's urine screen time," and I'd say, "Are you going to be clean or dirty?" And they'd say, "I'm going to be dirty," and I just, "Okay, do better next month. We'll try again next month." That didn't go very well. So I wasn't meant to be a probation officer. But I left there and I founded Sheltering Wings, which is a domestic violence shelter here in Danville. And I did that for a few years. And then I started having babies, and that just kind of re-railed and meandered me in all different directions, and founded a food program for young people, founded the Hendricks County Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And then I finally got ready to go back to work again, and I joined the board of Family Promise. And we were working hard to find a way to address the needs of families that were experiencing homelessness. And so we formed a group, then we became a 501c3. We hired our first director in 2015. And Stacy was with us for a couple years. And then by the time she was done, it was time in my life where I felt like I could work a job again, like not just do volunteer work, but actually get paid for my work. And so I came in as executive director in 2017. And when we started, we were in a little resource center in Avon, next to the Avon Library. And our mission was to end homelessness for families. We had a church rotation model, and I don't know if any of you were here for this, but this church was our place to live at least 6 or 8 weeks of the year, some years even more than that. We did a church rotation model where the families during the day would be at our resource center in Avon, but overnight they stayed in churches. And so we filled our downstairs with cots, and I remember this bathroom up here very familiarly. and so we would stay here for and this church was so welcoming. You know what else I loved about it? We would use this church and we'd bring outside volunteers into this church. So this congregation didn't always provide the volunteers for overnight. We'd bring in people from like Westbridge Church who wouldn't let us stay in their church but had volunteers that would come here and help with the families instead. It was really a beautiful way for the community to come together. Well, they'd always come back and they would say, did you know that they have like Black Lives Matter things on their walls in the bathroom? Did you see that pamphlet they had there? You know, they were, I just loved them. I'm like, yeah, I knew that. Sorry. It was cute. I loved it. So we appreciated all those years of being there here. And then COVID hit and we decided we had to do things differently. So we moved all of our homeless families into hotels. And we did that for about a year. And then in 2021, we were able to buy a shelter. And so right now, instead of rotating churches, we have an actual static site shelter in Plainfield. So it's on Township Line Road and 267. It's, if you guys are familiar at all, it's an old Dom property. It sits way off the road. It's surrounded by cornfields. And so we have 7 big bedrooms there where each of our family has a bedroom there that they'll stay for around, usually it's 60 to 90 days, but sometimes it's a lot longer depending on the situation of the family. Sometimes it's a very short period of time. So it's just like a couple of weeks before we're able to get them in their own homes. We're not a typical shelter where you just kind of hang out and wait for life to get better. Everyone in our program leaves in their own home. And so that was our origin. That's how we all started. But Family Promise is so much more than that today. We quickly realized in 2017 that it wasn't just enough to deal with the crisis, but instead we had two sides of the crisis, right? We had the side where we could have prevented that crisis from happening. And then the other side of the crisis, we had, what do we do to keep this from happening again? And so we realized that the model of emergency shelters wasn't right. We made the crisis the big part, right? When somebody passes away or somebody's sick, we all pile in with resources and attention and love. Well, it's the same way with homelessness. Like when someone becomes homeless, we got a crisis, we got to deal with it. And so all of our money and energy was poured into that crisis, and that model wasn't working. You know, why would that be our sole mission? And so we decided we had to expand the other two sides of homelessness, prevent it from occurring, and then make sure there's all those stability services available in our community to keep families stable. And so today, how we look today is much different than we looked back then. Then we had a budget of about $120,000 a year. Today, our budget's $2.5 million. So the growth of our organization has been tremendous, and so obviously has the work that we've been able to do. Last year alone, we were able to end homelessness for 175 families. Yeah, 175 families. Yeah, thank you. And we were able to prevent homelessness, right? So before they ever got there, for over 1,200 families. Yeah, and that's the true work that we do is in that space. And then when they're in housing, once we get them in housing or we, you know, make them stable in the housing that they are in, we stay with them for a couple of years to make sure that stability sticks. Because it's hard. You know, you go from not being able to pay your rent or being completely homeless to the next month living in a home or expected to pay your rent. And sometimes it's just not that easy, especially in a community that doesn't have a lot of affordable housing. And, you know, and it makes it really difficult. So we spend a lot of time trying to keep families stable. And that's a big part of our work. We have our resource center on Vine Street, which the brochure that's out there is a church that we rehabbed into our resource center. And then that's kind of the hub in the community for people who are struggling. So if someone needs help with rent or food or clothing or housing or transportation or childcare or whatever, or legal assistance, whatever that need is, that resource center is that hub for that service. And we also own the building next door, which is, we call it our annex. It's our housing annex. And it's all of our staff and advocates that work with people to get them in housing and keep them stable in housing. And then we have our emergency shelter, which I just shared with you about in Plainfield. And then we have another resource center in Brownsburg, which serves a similar function as our resource center in Plainfield, with the exception that it's in a school. It's within the Harris Academy, which is great for us. We're really connected with the Brownsburg School Corporation. And then finally, we have a new program, which we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about today, which is our immigrant center. And that's located in downtown in Plainfield. It's in a building that's right across the street from the new Performing Arts Center that they're building in Plainfield. We have the whole entire third floor of that building, so and that's our new immigrant center. We also own some properties, so one of the biggest struggles that we have in our community is not enough affordable housing. And so a couple years ago, we said we want to kind of tip our toes in that a little bit, not go all the way, and quickly realize that, no, there was a lot of momentum there, and there was a lot of work that we could do. So right now, we have in front of our shelter, if you decide to go out for a Sunday afternoon drive after you watch Caitlin Clark, you can go and drive by there, and you'll see in front, we are building duplexes there. We'll have six buildings, and it's a total of 12 homes that will be there for families who are struggling for stability. It's all affordable rent, so there are four bedrooms on each side, so it's a four-bedroom home for a family, and we're super grateful to have that as a resource, and it's on our property. We have another 30 townhomes that we're building just down the road from our shelter, across from the new Hobbs Station, which is this huge development in Plainfield. We're building 30 townhomes right across the street, and it's a partnership with Volunteers of America to help those who are experiencing substance use disorder not only get the services and support they need to remain sober and support their recovery, but also to be able to have housing there too. And then we just got approved for 16 townhomes that are going to be located on Avon Avenue. So it's in Avon, actually. And it's behind the Shell station. So if you start headed south on 267 off 36, it's a little area behind the Shell station that the town of Avon donated the land to us. And we're able to therefore build those townhomes on that property too. And then we have other projects in the next couple years that we have. We're doing 120 units of workforce housing with an early learning center, also in Plainfield as well. So our footprint is larger. There's more services that we can provide, but all of those things are just an outgrowth of the need of our community. I think that's what we always go back to and we continue to focus on is, what are the needs of our community? What can we do? How do we do it? What is the right way to do it? And you know, it's really easy for me, who has lived here my whole life, I'm a white, upper class woman who has never had a day in her life that I didn't wake up and get to choose to be strong. I could have just laid in bed that day and the world would have gone on just fine. My car would have got paid. My rent would have been paid. My lights would wake be on when I woke up the next day. And so I have never really truly had the struggles that the families that we serve have had. I've never had to worry about not having electricity or not having enough food. And so what we do at Family Promise is really, really listen and listen closely to the people that struggle. Because again, it's easy for me to tell you what's wrong with your life and how I think you need to fix it, right? It's not that. We really listen to people and we walk beside them to understand their struggles and then help walk with them to create solutions. And that's truly what Family Promise is about, is creating solutions for people who are struggling. And so one of the areas that we feel like, while we're preventing homelessness, we're in the courthouse for every eviction hearing in the county, trying to prevent people from being evicted. We're in the space of finding homes for people who are struggling. We're in the space of having early learning centers and new housing. But what we also know are these other big barriers in our community that continue to perpetuate poverty and instability for people. And one of those big areas are substance use disorder. And so we kind of went into that realm now as well. We provide harm reduction for people who are experiencing addiction and lots of resources and support. Instead of when you walk out of the ER after you've OD'd and you've been revived or you've just been there for services, the first call that hospital makes now is to Family Promise, and we're automatically connected to that person who just OD'd so that they immediately have someone to support them in the community. Whether or not they decide, maybe it's just giving them Narcan and our card to say, hey, next time, you can always call us. Or we join them on their path towards recovery. And that path meanders, it's not always the same. People go in and out of recovery a lot, and we're here for that. We're here for that all the time. On a weekly basis, we are housing people with substance use disorder of that 175 people last year that we rehoused, 40 of them were people who are experiencing mental health or substance use disorder. And we're really proud of being able to provide those services to the community. We also specialize in domestic violence. You know, my background has always been domestic violence. And so it was my goal from the very beginning to make sure that we were providing really true support for people with experiencing domestic violence. And so right now we have over 50 families that are part of our domestic violence housing program. And that means they never really went to a shelter. That means they left their abuser, or they left their grandmother's couch, or they left their car, all as a result of domestic violence, and straight into housing. And once we get them in housing, everything changes. Once they have that financial stability and that support, they don't go back to their abusers. They're ready for that life free of that violence and abuse. And so we're really proud of the work that we've been able to do with domestic violence. And another big area that has just evolved is our immigrant services. And that is truly a need that our community just wasn't filling. So what happened specifically was that we were starting to get lots of families in our emergency shelter who were new immigrants to our community. And once we were talking about this before I began, or before the service began, that once you have one, you get 20. And so we've just had a lot of new immigrants come to us for support. And so over a couple of years ago, I started hiring more and more advocates that were Spanish bilingual, because the majority are Spanish speaking. As of a year and a half ago, we have 26 staff members at Family Promise. Four of them were Spanish bilingual. And so we started to say, okay, we're kind of getting further into this. We're getting further into this. What else do we need to do? How else do we need to help families? And then last April, about this time, we had a family call us. They had just crossed the border from Venezuela. A lot of our immigrants are from Venezuela. Another big area is Guatemala. We have quite a few immigrants from Guatemala. And really a lot of Central America. And they had walked from Venezuela to the U.S.-Mexico border. It took them 2.5 months. They walked. They had a ride a couple of times. But it was a mom and her four children. Her oldest child was 17, almost 18 years old. The next child was 12, and then she had an 8-year-old, and then she had a 1-year-old. And the three oldest are boys, and the little girl is the one that was just a year old. And so they walked all the way from Venezuela to the border, and that's really treacherous. So that's through jungles, that's through rivers, that's a long way to go. They had nowhere to sleep. They slept on the ground as they came through. They had a little bed for the baby, and that's all they had to sleep on. They relied on the generosity of people along the way, but when you're going through countries that are already a lot are war-torn and poverty-stricken, it's hard. I mean, they barely made it. There were times when they didn't think they would, and they finally did make it to the U.S. border. And because they're from Venezuela, that's one of the countries that you're allowed to cross the border and say, I'm from Venezuela. Here's the proof that I'm from Venezuela. You are now a refugee in the United States. And so they were never here illegally. They were just here as a refugee, which is not much different, unfortunately. You still have nothing. You know, all you do is have a piece of paper that says, I'm here legally, but you don't have a work permit. You don't have anything else to be able to survive in this country. You just really come across and say, I'm a refugee. They say, okay, you're allowed to stay. And so they allowed the family to come in. Well, Albreth, who was the oldest, who was almost 18, turned 18 2 days after they arrived in the United States. And so once you're 18 years old, you're no longer, and not a woman with children, you go to detention camps. And so he was separated on the border from his mom and his three siblings and put in a detention camp. They don't speak any English whatsoever. They had no way of understanding how to get him out. Catholic Social Services Charities was there. They do a lot of the work at the border right now. And because they knew a family in Indianapolis, specifically in Plainfield, they told Catholic Charities that they knew someone. So Catholic Charities gave them a bus ticket and sent them to Indianapolis. It took them 2 days to get here. They came without any food, without any shoes. They had a little bag that was made out of a shirt. That was the only thing that they had. And they arrived at the Greyhound station in Indianapolis. And so the immigrant family that they did know in the community did know that they were going to arrive. And so they called Family Promise. And they're like, we don't know what to do. We had no idea they were going to show up. We had no idea, but here they are. And so we're like, okay, here we go. So one of our Spanish-speaking advocates, Carlos, he went and picked them up at the Greyhound station, and the first stop they made was, for whatever reason, Burger King is a big thing, and so they wanted to go to Burger King, and so he took them to Burger King and then took them to Walmart and got them shoes. Because they had no shoes or clothing, and then we welcomed them into our shelter, and that was last April. So it was a mom and the three younger children that were under 12 and the little baby girl. And so they lived with us. We were fortunate to have space in our shelter because it's not very often that we do. So they moved into our shelter, and so they stayed in our shelter until November. So from April through November of last year, they lived in our shelter, the four of them. We were able, because of the immigrant services that we did have at the time, we were able to help them file for all of the legalization paperwork that they needed to, and so that they could start the process of becoming acclimated to our community. We helped mom get a job. So one of the cool things that we have at Family Promise is that we have a list of employers that will take people without documentation, without Social Security cards. And so that was really helpful that she could start working. She also, I can tell this group that. There's a lot of groups I can't say these things to. But she was able to start working. And she made food in our kitchen of our shelter, and she would sell it at the warehouse. So she made extra money by selling food at the warehouse to the people that were there. But her heart was not right. You know, she still has a son that was in a detention camp. And so in October, we found out that he was going to be deported. So it takes a long time to get through that process. But in October, we found out that he was going to be deported. And so at that very same time, the federal government, for like a two-week time period, allowed people from Venezuela only to be able to get temporary refugee in our community who were not women and children. And so I was standing in my bathroom getting ready, and it came on CNN. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I immediately called our director of immigration, Mariella, and I'm like, this is our chance. This is our chance. I know we're not going to have much time. I know this is going to last very long. She's like, okay, I'm on it. And this was like at 7 o'clock in the morning. So we start calling attorneys all over in Texas, because he was in Dallas, Texas, all over Texas, all over Indianapolis that we knew that worked with immigration. And so we couldn't, we were like, this is our chance. They're like, we know, everybody's calling. We know. We're like, we got to figure out a way to get him out. And so we filed for all the paperwork and injunctions, and he was supposed to be deported at noon, and we got him out at 7 a.m. Yeah, it was insane. It was incredible. And so once you're out, you're out. So then we've got an 18-year-old in Dallas, Texas, with knows not a single soul and never been a free person in our country, right? Like for 2 days he was, and then he was in the detention camp. And so we called an Uber driver. We didn't know what else to do. You know, like, he's free. He's got his legal paperwork. But how do we get him to Plainfield, Indiana, right? And so we're like, well, if it was here, we would call an Uber driver. So we'll call an Uber driver. So we got him an Uber to the detention camp in Dallas. And we talked him into going in because he didn't know what to do. I'm like, can you just go in? So he went in the detention center, was able to get Albreth, and he was an immigrant as well. He was an African immigrant, but so he had enough empathy that he decided he would help him. And so we're like, we are on the phone with the Uber driver because Albreth didn't have a phone, right? So we're on the phone with the Uber driver, and he, we're like, can you just take him to the airport? And we'll deal with it from there. And he agreed to take him to the airport. So then we called the airlines, and we're like, we've got someone coming, and he's got a ticket, and everything is good, but he's special needs, and he needs a wheelchair. So we got a wheelchair. So you know what happens when you get a wheelchair at the airport? You're good to go, right? They take you everywhere you want to go. So we had the had the guys take him around everywhere, and we had the wheelchair privilege. And then he flew into Atlanta, and he had to change planes in Atlanta. And we're like, okay, still got to have this wheelchair because there's no way he's going to be able to maneuver Atlanta Airport. We kept him on the wheelchair. He stayed in there. And then, of course, you know how the story is going to end, right? So we pick him up at the airport with his mom and his siblings. And he's here with us now in America, in Indiana, and free. And as of today, they live in their own home. The kids are all in Plainfield schools. The oldest son, Albert, has a work permit, so he goes to work every day, has a driver's license, and this family is going to make it in our country, in our community. And that's just one story of so many that we serve. Right now, we have 47 families that are in our immigrant program. So those are families just like this family that I just described that have gone through so very much to be in our country. And of course, for us, it's almost the best part because these families work so hard and are so grateful and want nothing more than to be able to support and love their families, and they'll do anything to do that. And so we're proud to have those services. And we were really fortunate that we shared our story enough that we had a funder that was willing to step in and provide the funding to be able to open our own immigrant services so that we could make sure we were providing all of the comprehensive services that families need. And so now we have a staff of 5 that all they do is immigrant work for Family Promise in our new facility. And that's everything. So that's someone who comes to us with absolutely nothing, to people who just need help with work permits or documentation, or we have special groups for our families who go through the trauma. We have a lot of people who go through that are trafficked, that are human trafficking victims, and those families and those moms especially have been through so much. Some of them owe tons of money to coyotes who helped bring them across the border, smuggle them across the border. And we call that human trafficking at Family Promise as well, because the abuse they endure at the hands of those coyotes is pretty significant. And then they pretty much hold them hostage when they're in America, that every bit of their pay that they get, that it has to go back to their home country, back to those coyotes who help smuggle them across the border. So it's just continued abuse that our families are experiencing. And so we help them, you know, we help pay all their other bills so they can pay off their coyotes, because there's no legal way to do that. We've tried lots of different ways, and there's just no way to do it when it's in a different country. And so we have special groups and therapists that work with our families. We have Immigrant 101 classes that meet twice a month that are the classes that help our new immigrants learn about being specific to our Hendricks County community, what you need to survive, what you need to do, lessons you need to learn, how to use your thermostat, how to make sure you use car seats, you know, you can't drink and drive, things that are not things that are typical in their own home countries. So it's a big learning process for the families too. And so we help them do that. And we have health affairs where we have immigrant doctors and nurses who come in and provide health care for our families, because they don't qualify for Medicaid or any of those things when they're undocumented. And so we have doctors that provide and dentists that provide those services to our families for free, which has been just a true, true blessing for all of them to be able to have health care that they never have had in their lives. You know, they don't have any vaccinations. They really don't have much at all. And so it's a very comprehensive program from nothingness to stability in our community. And that's our only true measure. That's all we care about at the end of the day. We want them to be stable and be able to care for their families in our own community. And that's truly the goal of all of Family Promise, but it's also the goal specifically of our immigrant program. And as we move forward, there's so much more work that needs to be done. And we have so many new ideas and things that we want to do. But we're going to become an accredited representative, and we'll be the 3rd in the state of Indiana. And that allows us to go into immigration courts and represent our clients, which is a big hole that we have right now, because we have to hire attorneys to do a lot of that work now, and it gets really expensive, even though we have attorneys that help us. So we'll become accredited representative agency, and so we'll have two staff members that will be able to do actually get to pretend to be an attorney even though they're not, which will be really helpful for our families as they move forward for stability in our community. At the end of the day, everything we do at Family Promise is that we want people to feel like they belong. We want them to feel that Hendricks County is a home for all of us, not just those that have been here for their entire lives like me, but for new people that walk in the door or walk into our community. They don't realize they just crossed the border from Indianapolis to Avon. They don't know, but once they're here, we want to make sure that they have all that they need to be stable and successful in our community. And I'm proud to be able to be part of that and to be part of a team that is part of that and to be part of a community that wants that for everyone. And I mean, we have pockets of our community that are difficult, obviously, but the majority of us all want to feel that. We all want to love one another. We all have empathy. And, you know, people ask a lot, you know, what is the one thing we can do for Family Promise? Well, the one thing you can do is have empathy for people who struggle and share that empathy with others in the community. Like, that is the biggest, best thing that any of us can do. The second biggest, best thing that any of us can do is allow more affordable housing, because oftentimes those barriers are hard to get past. But as a community, if you know people who are part of town councils or part of plan commissions or part of the county councils, those people matter. They're the ones that make the decisions in our community about what housing is allowed and what housing isn't allowed. And right now, we're at a big imbalance. And so we've got some great projects going on. But without affordable housing, none of the other work is really going to matter or really going to stick. So I would be happy to answer any questions. Out front, I left like a sheet about how to help. So there's a list of things that all of us can do to help Family Promise, real specific things like wish lists and helping families move into their own homes and other ideas of things that you can be part of. There's another sheet that's called Help Services. I think it's called Help Now, Hendricks County Help Now. And it's a list of services that families in Hendricks County who are struggling can use right now to help them improve their situation. And there's also a brochure, and there's also a list of all of our specific services that we have for immigrants. So please feel free to take those. And when you look over them and you have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me to ask or to think about some way that you can be involved and be part of all of this work, because I guarantee there's a place for all of us at Family Promise, and we're all about trying to make sure we create that for everyone in our community as well. Yeah, so the biggest area is for volunteers is in our resource center or in our shelter, and that's what we need the most. We need more volunteers to work with our families. And sometimes that means answering the phones. Sometimes that means sorting clothes in our donation room. But a lot of times it means working directly with our families, so helping them get to appointments or helping them with resumes. And it's any type of those kind of work, helping take Narcan to different places in the community. Narcan, everybody gets Narcan, right? Okay. So a community, and I should have brought some here, like helping spread that awareness in the community. So many opportunities. Honestly, if there's something that touched your heart while I was speaking, I guarantee there's something that you can do for that. Any other questions?
Yeah, you said you had this like center that people could walk into and say, I need help. How, other than that, how do you identify people before the crisis?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really good question. So one of the ways that we do that is through our eviction work. So right now we get the docket at least 3 weeks ahead of time for our courts in Hendricks County when an eviction is filed. And so then we step in when that eviction's been filed, and we work with the attorney, with the landlord or the property manager, and if they have an attorney, their attorney, and we become the mediator to work out an agreement so that family can stay in that home. And sometimes that means that we pay their rent to keep them in their homes. Sometimes that means that their rent is just too high. There's, you know, we've had people with high high as $12,000 in back rent. And so sometimes there's nothing we can do, but then we're able to help find them another place to live. That's one way. But the biggest way, too, is, you know, that we work with all of our schools. So if they have a family that's struggling, our number one referral right now are our schools. That's where we get the most people. Word of mouth and social media and other government agencies like the trustees, we get a lot of referrals from them, from churches. So, you know, instead of calling a church and saying, I need help with rent, instead of the church just giving them $200 or whatever, instead of doing that, they refer them to Family Promise. So we get a lot of people that way. We're also like on the 211. So that's a common way that people get resources in the community is to call 211. We're one of those providers too. So if somebody calls that number and says, I can't pay my rent, then they refer them to Family Promise as well. Our immigrants specifically is more word of mouth. We also get referrals from Marion County, like the Immigrant Welcome Center and Exodus and other programs in Marion County that work with immigrants often refer their people that they can't help to Family Promise, and then we help them as well. So it's a lot of different ways it all comes in, but it's a busy place. It's a very busy place. It really depends on the school. So Avon, Brownsburg, and Plainfield are incredible. Avon so much so that they have an English class that they provide to the parents of their students. So the whole family gets to be part of English classes at Avon schools, which is incredible. Of course, it's always filled. So we have our own class that we have people in because it's just there's just not enough of those kind of classes. We're working really hard to get similar programs into Brownsburg and into Plainfield, especially Plainfield, for the same purposes. And so it's partnerships, right? It's partnerships between the schools and with us to be able to provide those classes. Smaller schools are tough just because they don't have the resources to be able to do the work. And, you know, while Avon may have, 30 children, Danville may have one. And so it's hard for them to have a whole classroom or a whole program geared for one person instead of 30. So just a little bit about the growth of immigration. So our immigrants in Hendricks County. So in the last 10 years, Marion County's immigrant population has increased by 30%. So 10 years ago, they had 30% less immigrants than they do now. In Hendricks County, that number has grown 137% in the same 10-year period. Now, we may have started out at a smaller number, but regardless, there's been a tremendous growth. Right now, Hendricks County is only 80% white. 20% of our population in Hendricks County now identifies as people of color. Now, obviously, not all of them are immigrants. Our second largest minority group, our first largest minority group is African Americans in Hendricks County. So we're changing. Our community's changing, and sometimes you don't realize it, but we are. We're changing in lots of good ways. Yes, and fast, too. Any other questions?
I was here in 2015 when we were having people in the basement, and I am just absolutely astounded at what you've done in seven years.
Thank you.
Just incredible.
Thank you.
If you've only been using $2.5 million in your budget, you're really leveraging that money well.
We are trying our very best. Yeah, we're doing. We have so many good things happening. Yeah.
Anybody else? Well, thank you very
much.
Oh
my gosh, thank you guys very much. Thank you.